You're listening to Vatican Radio. The Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I arrived on the Greek island of Crete on Wednesday, ahead of the opening of a historic meeting of Orthodox leaders at the weekend. The Holy and Great Council of the Orthodox Church, as the week-long encounter is called, was due to bring together the heads of the 14 autocephalous or self-governed Orthodox churches to consider the most pressing issues facing believers in countries around the world today. Over the past few weeks, the Bulgarian, Syrian, Georgian, Serbian and Russian primates have threatened to boycott the meeting over questions they say should be settled before such a synod can begin. Patriarch Bartholomew, who will preside at the meeting, said he is personally calling the other leaders to remind them of their responsibilities in light of the unanimous decision on the Council's agenda taken in Geneva at the end of January. Cardinal Kurt Koch, head of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, will be leading a Catholic delegation together with representatives of other Christian denominations to attend the opening Mass on Sunday and the first official session of the Council on Monday. Yet even the decision to invite ecumenical observers to the opening and closing sessions was a sensitive question and the result of much discussion and compromise among the different Orthodox leaders. That's according to historian and professor Nicholas Kazarian, an Orthodox priest and specialist on the impact of religion on international relations. Professor Kazarian spoke with Nicolas Papachristou about the Orthodox Church's relations with other Christians and about the issues the Council will be considering during this long-awaited meeting.
In the decisions at the very end of the synaxis of the primates of the Orthodox Church in January, was decided to send invitations to non-Orthodox observers from other Christian denominations, for example, to some people from the Catholic Church or Coptic Church, the Orthodox Oriental Churches, and the Protestant world, that they can come to the Council, they can assist to the opening and the closing sessions, but they cannot have a voice and they cannot vote during the Holy and Great Council. I mean, if you compare with the Second Council of Vatican in the 60s in the Catholic Church, we don't show as much openness as the Second Vatican Council.
So that decision is a result of keeping balances, of compromises between the Orthodox churches?
This is exactly what it is, the compromise, the fruit of a difficult negotiation, because I know that some churches didn't want to see any non-Orthodox, even observers, during the Council. So this is the fruit of the tension between very conservative parties among the Orthodox churches and more open and more ready to dialogue Orthodox churches. But I think the problem, the question of ecumenism is polarized a lot, the discussion and the tendencies among the Orthodox churches between those who wants to not live in a ghetto or keep being in an ivory tower, but somehow the Orthodox Church has to get into the 21st century, and ecumenism is one of the doors that open on the 21st century.
What is the issues that they will discuss in this Holy and Great Council of the Orthodox Church, and how much these issues are, let's say, applies to the problems or interests of the simple believers?
As you know, the agenda of the Holy and Great Council has put six items, meaning six documents that were prepared during the Pan-Orthodox preparatory process, which started 50 years ago. So of these six documents, some are clearly related to the life and the society in which the Orthodox faithful live in. For example, the question of marriage, the document on marriage, is not about the impediment of marriage or the way the Orthodox Church thinks about marriage as a sacrament, but it is also a lesson about what's a family. And as you know, being in Rome, the question of family has been a very central and crucial issue for the Catholic Church now. The second document I will refer to is the document on fast and the way that the Orthodox fast today, because it was first when the item was put on the agenda and the document was written, it was first meant to answer and to tackle the question of the Orthodox in the diaspora, but also of how can we fast in countries where at that time under the Soviet rule. And as you know, it was very difficult to practice fasting because it will show the people that you are faithful. And so you are marginalized in the society. Now, the question is quite different because the geopolitical equation has changed. And the thing that we need to understand is about the question of fasting is not only about rules that were made up during the first millennium, but it is also how, as Orthodox Christians, we have to deal with consumerism. And I think this is a very important issue. The third document I will refer to is the document titled The Mission of the Orthodox Church in Today's World. This document is, in my opinion, one of the most important documents because not only it refers to social and political problems, but it also underlines the willingness of the Orthodox Church to be a key player in raising the peace in the world, to be a key player as people of dialogue. And I guess this is very important because for the first time it will show the world that the Orthodox Church is not closed, is not isolated, but it is a church open on the world, on the problem of the world. And it's not only being a church in the world, but also in church answering of the problem of the world.